This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Late last week, the Trump administration unveiled a plan to roll back Obama-era fuel efficiency standards. The plan would strip California's hard-won ability to set its own course on restricting tailpipe emissions. The government says its proposal will make cars and light trucks safer and more affordable. Critics, and there are many, say it will do neither. What else is in this proposal? And what's at stake for consumers, automakers, and the environment? Joining us in studio to discuss it is Marlo Lewis, a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a conservative free market think tank. Marlo, welcome back to 1A.
Very glad to be with you today.
Joining us from Denver is Levi Tilleman. His expertise is in auto technology and the government's role in stimulating innovation. He's also the author of The Great Race, The Global Quest for the Car of the Future. And he is a former special advisor for the Department of Energy in the Obama administration. Levi, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
And joining us from NPR West is Sonari Glinton, now a freelance journalist, formerly NPR's auto industry correspondent. Sonari, glad to talk to you again. Thanks for making time for us.
It's good to be with you.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about these auto industry standards, especially if you work in the business at any level, whether it's car design or manufacturing or engineering, whether you work on an assembly line or work the floor at the dealership, or if you're just in the market for a new car. Share what you know about the future of cars and car efficiency. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Sonari Glinton, let me start with you. Can you just give us the basic 30,000-foot view of the government's proposal?
Well, essentially, it is to hold in place the fuel standards that the Obama administration had mandated, and that would just freeze, you know, these really tough fuel standards. But there's this secret part, which is to take, or not secret, there's an important part, which is would take away California's waiver, which allows California to set tougher standards than the rest of the nation, which has, you know, been a part of, you know, the EPA and the California Air Resources Board, which predates the EPA, right? This has been a part of the environmental legislation going back to 1970. So this is very big, at least here in California.
We should pick apart a little bit of what you just said. There's the national fuel standards, which we're used to, and I think those of us who ever had to buy a car have heard about these California emission standards. That's the part that's related to the California Air Resources Board, this statewide agency that you said predates the national rules. Is that right?
Yeah, in California, we recognize, because of smog, a problem before it was a national issue. And in many ways, California pushed the national government into creating the EPA. And in recognition of the fact that California, we have more people, our air is worse, we have different things, says that, you know, California gets to make special rules and always does, as long as that there is, gets to follow, you know, harder rules or gets to make stricter rules than the federal government. The industry has always disliked the idea of having multiple rules, and they have not liked the idea of California having tougher rules. And right now, the auto industry seems to be pleased by this right now.
Before I come to the panel scenario, we should be clear that part of this is just by dint of the fact that California is the biggest state in the union. I mean, it's 38 million people, 1/8 of the U.S. population lives in California. Its economy is on par with nations like Germany. It's kind of just the economic heft that California has as a market in some ways, I think, that has allowed it to kind of have this bully pulpit about auto emissions, right?
Well, then there are other states that then sign on to California's rules. They say, like, oh, usually the government catches up to California eventually. So there are other states that have signed on to just essentially adopt what California's rules are. So it's not just that California is bigger. California is a leader in this space, clearly. And it has been for the last 40 years. And, you know, it's been a leader so much so that the federal government has followed its lead.
Well, we asked for some of your thoughts about this proposed new standard from the Trump administration. Oh, Sonari, before we move on to that, I just want to clarify one more thing. Oh. When you talk about the Obama-era standards and this rollback, just to be clear, the Trump administration's plan is, it sounds like it's not really to change what the standard is. There was another standard that was supposed to be met by 2025, and this would just kind of freeze it after, what is it, 2020.
So 2020.
Okay, so it wouldn't really change what the goal is. It would just kind of bring the goal line closer.
Yeah, and that and it would have to hit an average of 30 miles per gallon in real world driving.
Got it.
Now the proposed change would halt further improvement requirements. So that's, you know, one of the issues that, you know, there needs to be improvements in the electric vehicle in order for it to be adopted mass by people, and that's a part of the issue.
Gotcha. Well, now that we've explained what the changes are, we've heard a number of your thoughts about what this change might mean for you. Here is some of what you left in our inbox.
I don't understand how President Trump wants to, quote, make America great again by going back to higher emissions on cars, dumping wastes and letting the coal mines, pollute our air. It's all part of tearing everything good down. I just don't understand how this man thinks the way he does and how the Republican administration is allowing him to get away with it.
One of a number of listeners that we heard from who are not big fans of this plan. Marlo Lewis, let me start with you. You are a fan of this plan. What do you say is the one best aspect, the one biggest part of this plan that you really like the most?
Well, what I really like is that this plan will make automobiles more affordable to the average American household, the middle income earners in this country, because you can't get these very aggressive year after year increases in fuel economy or year after year reductions in carbon dioxide emissions without requiring the auto companies to spend tens of billions of dollars every year on new technologies. And those costs are passed along to the American people, people who still want cars that would meet those standards under the Obama schedule can still buy them. But it means that a lot of other people will not be forced either to buy a car that they wouldn't otherwise buy or just not buy a new car at all because they can't afford it. And this will actually lead to safer vehicles because if vehicles on average cost, and the administration, the Trump administration is estimating $2,400 less, then that means there's a whole bunch of people, millions probably, who can actually afford to get a new car, and new cars are safer than older cars. And so, you know, we'll see how this all shakes out in the rulemaking, but the administration is estimating that this will actually save 12,700 lives over 10 years just because it will accelerate fleet turnover to newer vehicles.
Levi Tilleman, I know you are not a fan of this proposal. Is there one particular aspect of this proposal that bugs you the most?
Well, I think it's important to explain where the American auto industry is. We are in a golden age of automotive innovation. American automakers are selling more vehicles than they ever have. They're selling higher priced vehicles than they ever have. And that's because consumers are opting to buy more expensive vehicles. And so much of the technological progress that we've made has come from smart policy driving innovation within the industry. And a lot of that policy has come from California. Now, what the Trump administration is telling us is that this is going to result in vehicles that are cheaper and vehicles that are safer. And the fact of the matter is that consumers aren't opting to buy cheaper vehicles today. They're opting to buy nicer vehicles. And when it comes to the arguments about safety, there are so many ways that we can improve the safety of our vehicles in America, and this is one of the worst possible ways. What this is doing is it's dragging us back to an era of less intelligent regulation, of less innovation. We have companies like Tesla that have been the direct result of California's efforts to push smarter vehicles onto the roads. And today, Tesla employs almost as many people as the entire U.S. coal industry. And so that has meant jobs, that has meant returning America to the forefront of innovation in the global automotive economy. And what this does is it pulls us back, and it's going to make us the loser in the global auto industry.
Levi, I just want to make sure I'm clear on something that you said. You said that people aren't opting just to buy cheaper cars, they're opting to buy better cars. I think people are opting to buy both. I mean, I'm almost done paying off my car now, thank you, Jesus. And one of the reasons was definitely that it was less expensive. I mean, cost matters, doesn't it?
Cost matters, but if you look at the U.S. auto market today, people are opting for bigger cars. They're opting for cars that have more features, and that's the reason that the cost of cars is going up. There are a lot of cheap, extremely high-quality cars out there available on the market, but people are going for these deluxe SUVs. And so the problem right now with the U.S. auto economy is not that there aren't high quality affordable cars out there. The problem is that we are in a sinking life raft with 1,000 holes, and that sinking life raft is our climate. And we are plugging those holes as quickly as we can, and the Trump administration is coming up behind us and ripping off those patches.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment with Levi Tilleman, the author of The Great Race, Sonari Glinton, journalist formerly with NPR, and Marlo Lewis, senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We did reach out to a number of automakers, including Ford and GM, but received little response other than a joint statement. We'll share that with you momentarily. And some of you have been asking some really good questions about the details of these newly more efficient cars. Mike asked, which is more environmentally friendly, a natural gas car or an electric car that has to require batteries made and someday resalvaged? Good question, Mike. We'll get to that in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Now shut up and drive. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the future of cars through the lens of a new proposal from the Trump administration to change the fuel efficiency standards on what could be your next purchased car. With Marlo Lewis of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Levi Tilleman, the author of The Great Race, and journalist Sonari Glinton, we'd love to hear from you. Share what you know about the future of fuel efficiency. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@wamu.org. Sonari, you sounded like you were trying to jump in before we had to pause. Let me let you make your point, and then we'll get to some comments.
Well, when we talk about the expense of the automobile, right, one of the reasons it's so expensive are those features and moving towards autonomy, right? That's a really important part. Now, we can imagine a world in which when there are autonomous cars, we can see vehicle miles traveled doubling, tripling, if people can just get a car whenever they want. Now imagine that with people using gasoline in those cars, and you see a huge problem down the road. Also, you know, so there is, you know, this is more than just, you know, savings now. This is about getting us towards autonomous vehicles, and it's also about making it easier for us to move around when we have so many vehicles on the road.
As I mentioned, we did reach out to Ford, GM, and other automakers, but we received little response other than a joint statement that's pretty anodyne. Here's the statements from the Auto Alliance and Global Automakers, which are two organizations that represent Nearly Automaker that sells cars in the U.S. This is a joint statement from them both. Here it is. Quote, automakers support continued improvements in fuel economy and flexibilities that incentivize advanced technologies while balancing priorities like affordability, safety, jobs, and the environment. With today's release of the administration's proposals, referring to last week's release, it's time for substantive negotiations to begin. Continues to read, quote, we urge California and the federal government to find a common sense solution that sets continued increases in vehicle efficiency standards while also meeting the needs of America's drivers, unquote. That's the statement from the Auto Alliance and Global Automakers. Marlo Lewis, this feels like a very anodyne statement of the industry basically going, eh, they'll figure it out. What do you make of the fact that they haven't figured it out so far, that the industry and the government have not quite yet reached an agreement on what the standard should be?
Well, to some extent, what you hear from the automakers is the plea of children who hope their parents will stop fighting and dread above all that they will get divorced. And they want to somehow keep these agencies working together happily because, and here's what's not being talked about by the automakers. They are scared to death of California going its own way, because if California is actually able to set its own motor vehicle standards for carbon dioxide emissions from a tailpipe, this is completely different from any other emission that causes actual air pollution, because carbon dioxide standards are just fuel economy standards by another name, and they actually work the same way. Instead of the standards being set for each vehicle, it's a fleet average. And so if California actually was able to go its own way, which it has threatened to do unless it gets its own way here, it means that every state that opted in to the California program would also be able to effectively regulate fuel economy within its borders. And that means that the automakers, in order to meet the same California standard in all these different states, would actually have to manage separate vehicle fleets, reshuffle the mix of vehicles that are sold to each of those states to achieve the specified average. This balkanization of the auto market terrifies them, and that's why they want these agencies to get along. That's why they don't want their parents to divorce.
Yeah, Levi, I was going to ask you about that. I know one of the concerns about California being able to set its own standards in the first place, among those who disagree with that, is that it kind of oversteps its authority, that's the kind of thing the federal government should do. And if California can do its own thing, why can't Michigan do its own thing? Why can't Texas, Florida, New York, why can't they do their own things? And then suddenly you have an automaker who potentially has to manage 50 different relationships with 50 states who could have slightly different fuel efficiency standards.
Well, the reason California has this ability is not merely because of the size of its auto market. It is the largest auto market in the country. But because of the fact that when the Clean Air Act amendments were passed, California received a specific set of authorities that allowed it to set its own pollution standards because of the unique problems that they had with smog within their state. Now, I'm glad you brought up that issue of balkanization, Marlo, because what is happening here is the United States is becoming balkanized from the rest of the world in terms of fuel economy standards. The rest of the world is on track for achieving basically similar fuel economy standards, and the United States was more or less tracking with those standards under the Obama administration rules. And what the Trump administration is doing is they are taking us back to a different set of standards that will put us behind the rest of the world. And so that is really not an issue of the automakers being able or not being able to reach those standards. It's an issue of taking money out of our pockets and giving it to the oil companies. That is the only thing that this policy does.
Sonari?
Well, and another thing to the balkanization, there's two points. One, the Chinese, it's important to the Chinese government to appease their people by cleaning up the air. This is an issue there. In Europe, this is an issue for not just, for conservatives and liberals, right? This, in America, we have sort of created this unusual divide. It was, the Conservative Party in England, for instance, that pushed for, banning diesel, et cetera. So, I mean, we do that here. And now the fear for some in the auto industry is actually not that the fuel rules will hold the industry back. It's that that electrification will move someplace else. When we notice the people, in the U.S., the companies are cheering. But, Toyota, the biggest electric car company on the planet, isn't necessarily going to get out of the electric car business. And there's a fear that those jobs, that sort of the electrification jobs that could come here will go elsewhere because California and the United States isn't on the forefront.
We've heard from a number of you about this global aspect of the future of cars. Truck of Trolls wrote on our website, the1a.org, the Trump administration is removing incentives for American automotive engineering design teams to provide global leadership that's being supplanted by designs out of Toyota, BMW, and Honda. Automobile design is a global industry with safety, emissions, and fuel consumption standards set by regulators in the EU, Japan, and China, and importantly, in the marketplace. Trump is diminishing the U.S. in world markets. Blake is listening from Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and Blake emailed, one of my good friends lives in Norway, and he recently sent me a list of the 15 best-selling cars there. I thought you might find it interesting that 10 of the 15 are plug-in electrics, and 4 of the remaining are hybrids. Only one, the Volvo V90, which is a diesel, uses fossil fuels. Marlo?
Yes, well, I think it was Sonari, it might have been Levi, who said that, look, Americans today predominantly want more expensive cars. They're buying luxury cars. And there is actually a boom in SUVs and crossovers. But that just means that if these standards, according to them, actually are in alignment with American consumer preferences, then you don't need a mandate to make people buy cars that my colleagues here say they already want. And similarly, if we're talking about, say, China's market, yeah, China has been talking about setting some kind of very, very tough emission standards for its vehicles. American automakers would still be able to make vehicles for the Chinese market if they think they can overcome the $25,000 tariff on imported vehicles in China. But the idea
but
that
tariff is going away if the vehicle's electric, by the way.
Okay. Wait a minute. Don't interrupt me, please.
Well, hold on a second. Okay. Wait. Yeah. So Sonari is making a good counterpoint.
Okay.
Sonari, finish
that
point, and then I'll let Marlo finish.
Okay.
Just sit tight for one second.
Sure.
Sorry. The Chinese lowered that tariff on electric vehicles. So that's I'm going to point that. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you
go ahead,
don't.
Marlo.
Okay. So then, if an American auto company or Tesla wants to produce electric vehicles for the Chinese market, you don't need a central plan that basically forces electrification on the buying public in the United States in order to produce for the Chinese market. This whole notion that we need to mandate the automobile, we have to impose tough standards on the U.S. auto industry so that it will try to compete for customers either at home or abroad doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, but I do kind of, Marlo, I do kind of understand a little bit in terms of the value of these standards. I mean, I've never worked in the auto industry, so I may be speaking out of my neck, but I do, you know, I do take a little piece of this very anodyne statement from the industry, you know, saying that they urge California and the feds to find a common sense solution to kind of meet somewhere in the middle. If there's one thing that we know businesses hate, it's uncertainty. And I can imagine if I was, you know, Mary Barra, GM, for example, the CEO, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with the future of GMC trucks and Buick cars and so Chevys. Like, I just want to be able to know. I want to be able to get on the next quarterly earnings call and say, look, this is the standard. Here's what we're building. We know exactly what we're doing between now and model year 2025. Please keep your money in General Motors. Doesn't it make sense for a company to want that kind of black and white certainty from the U.S. government?
But it's false certainty. We've seen that right now. As soon as any administration dares to relax the Obama administration standards, even a little bit, just by freezing the increase in fuel economy at 2020 through 2026, California threatens to pick up its marbles and go home and tear apart the so-called one harmonized national vehicle program. The solution, the real regulatory certainty that the auto companies are looking for in all the wrong places, is to repeal California's intrusion in the regulation of fuel economy, which is preempted quite literally by the nation's fuel economy statute, as amended in 2007. And that is, it's amazing the Trump administration has actually raised this issue for the first time in the history of fuel economy regulation.
Levi Tillman, why don't you jump in? Go ahead.
Marlo, what you are saying is inaccurate. The person who is picking up their marbles and going home is the Trump administration. The Trump administration is breaking a deal that they made with the automakers and with the state of California, and they are dragging America back into the past rather than leading it forward into the future. And what you are describing does not describe reality. Three out of four Americans want higher fuel economy standards. And the entire history of innovation, the entire history of regulation of the auto industry shows that automakers perform best when there are tough technological standards that they can innovate towards. And we saw that in the 70s during the oil crisis. We saw that in the 80s. We saw that in the 90s and early 2000s. They didn't innovate towards tougher fuel economy standards, and it hurt American competitiveness globally. And once we reinstituted those standards, the auto industry in America performed better than it has in decades.
We've heard from some of you who have said that these are the kind of standards that you want in a vehicle. Bryce tweeted, I want my vehicle to be as fuel efficient as possible because not only does it help the environment, it saves me money at the gas pump. Neutering fuel efficiency standards is anti-consumer. And Mitch emailed, I've got a Chevy Volt. It's the 15th car I've owned since 1972. And the best overall car I've owned. It's 100% electric drive with a gas engine that runs a generator when the battery's flat. I get over 100 miles per gallon and never want another gas-propelled car. Sonari?
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this is that there was agreement. There was a standard, right? That was, it was, you know, the Obama administration, California, and the industry, everyone got together. And essentially, because the administration had the cudgel of the recent economic bailout, it forced the industry to agree to the one standard, right? And that is to come up with this standard that was really, really tough. That so that idea that there was some regulatory certainty before, this is where this is changing things. So if you have a standard in which for the since the 70s, the federal government has, you know, stepped aside for California, people understand that. And also, there's this idea in with many in the industry that maybe the industry lost some of its cover for investing in electrification. If you're a Ford investor, you're saying, hey, sell more F-150s. And if their administration is there saying, oh, you have these tough fuel standards, then at least you can justify spending money on this electrification that you know you need. So in many ways, the administration may have given the auto industry more than what it wanted. They wanted to relax the standards, but have some cover so that they could invest in these things for Wall Street.
Sonari, let's camp out on the standards as they currently stand in just a moment. President Obama announced the fuel efficiency standards back in May of 2009, this attempt to curb vehicle emissions to fight climate change. Here is part of what President Obama said at the time.
The goal is to set one national standard that will rapidly increase fuel efficiency without compromising safety by an average of 5% each year between 2012 and 2016, building on the 2011 standard my administration set shortly after taking office.
Part of what President Obama said back in May of 2009. Sonari, I know we have to pause in just a moment, but just stepping back, looking at the plan objectively, how well did the plan work out? Is there any credence to the argument that it didn't work out as it was intended, or that it may have hamstrung the industry in some ways? What's an objective way to look at the performance of this plan?
Well, one of the ways to look at the performance of the plan is look at how people have adopted or not adopted electric vehicles, right? So, you know, still in America right now, electric vehicles are a tiny percentage, around 3%. Now, electric vehicle sales are going up. Hybrids are sort of flattened. But where people have chosen clearly is bigger SUVs. That's where the heat is. So you can look and say that consumers made a choice. The other thing was, though, is that gasoline is relatively cheap right now for people. And this was a problem for the industry a decade ago. I'm a third generation car person. I know the cycles of the industry are in my bones. When the price of gas goes up, that then becomes a problem, right? And so that's one of the things that is key in that, is saving money on this gas.
Speaking of gas prices, David tweeted, "The rollback of fuel economy for automobiles is clearly for the interest of oil companies. Anyone who believes anything else is in need of an IQ check." Interesting comment from David. If we take the argument that this plan is a loss for the economy and for the environment, who is it a win for? Does anyone benefit from these new standards, or does everybody lose? Stay close. Before we get back to our conversation, we would love your help with tomorrow's program about the Me Too movement. The latest controversy involves Les Moonves, the head of CBS Corporation. A recent piece in The New Yorker details the claims of women accusing him of sexually harassing them and even of impeding their careers for rejecting his advances. CBS says it is investigating, and for now, Mr. Moonves remains on the job. It's just the latest example of how companies are dealing with the Me Too movement, some being more proactive than others about changing their cultures and investigating claims. What are you seeing at your company? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. How is Me Too changing your corporate culture, if at all? Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. Or use our new app, 1A Vox Pop, to send us a radio-quality audio file and keep up to date on future topics. You can download 1A Vox Pop, V-O-X-P-O-P, in the App Store, and we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Sonari Glinton, Levi Tilleman, and Marlo Lewis. David tweeted, "The rollback of fuel economy for automobiles is clearly for the interests of oil companies. Anyone who believes anything else is in need of an IQ check." Greg in Raleigh, North Carolina, shared something similar. Greg writes, "What the country needs is leadership to develop a comprehensive transportation plan. The U.S. needs to treat transportation as a system. We should stop subsidizing oil and put a $2 a gallon tax to rebuild the infrastructure, which must include high-speed rail and rebuilding our collapsed bridges and roadways." Marlo, I think the larger question of comprehensive transportation plan is probably an hour for another day, but what about the argument related to the oil industry?
I think sure, if you reduce fuel economy or if you reduce the rise in fuel economy to some extent, it means that you'll have a few billion more gallons of oil being purchased over a 10-year period. But it's really a drop in the bucket compared to the global oil market annually. And that's not what's driving this. The oil industry, as far as I know, has been silent. And so unless you're going to allege some kind of conspiracy that they're actually pulling the wires behind the Trump administration, the main thrust here, I think, is what the rule says it's about. It's about consumers. It's about expanding consumer choice. It's about making vehicles, ensuring vehicles that are affordable, new vehicles, and that will have benefits in safety. And the estimate, and of course, we'll have to hash that out in the comment period, see what people say, is that the total societal benefits over 10 years add up to about $500 billion. And that includes $77 billion in fewer fatalities, $120 billion in fewer serious injuries. And so if you want to blame it all on oil company conspiracies, be my guest, but you're going to be hard-pressed for evidence.
I do want to get into the safety argument behind this in just a minute. But Levi Tilleman, I wonder what you make of the oil industry argument. I'm kind of skeptical of that because many of the same energy companies that are drilling for oil are also drilling for natural gas. So quite a few of them have started pivoting to other forms of fossil fuels, some of which are working their way into the auto industry, albeit more slowly. But how do you see it?
the only industry that this benefits is the oil industry. The arguments regarding safety are hogwash. The arguments regarding affordability are hogwash. This takes money out of the pockets of American consumers, and it puts it into the pockets of American oil men. And that is the only reasonable justification for this policy. The industry was on track to meet these standards. These standards put us in alignment with the global automotive industry, and consumers want them. 3 out of 4 Americans want higher fuel economy standards. Those numbers that are listed in terms of lives saved and in terms of money saved, they are based on absurdist premises. And I think that any American that doesn't understand that this is a naked ploy to transfer money from American consumers to American oil men needs to go back and look at the incentives of this administration, because that is where their support comes from, and that is clearly where their loyalties lie.
Marlo?
Yeah. It's not absurdist to say that if cars are more affordable, people will be more likely to buy them. And when you extend that premise across a couple of million families, you actually will accelerate fleet turnover. And it's also, I mean, I think someone, maybe it was you earlier, who said that the reason the auto companies really want these standards is so that they'll have cover with their shareholders to invest in electric vehicles. So that suggests if you want a cui bono here, this is really designed to benefit the politically correct automakers like Tesla, who are having a hard time actually expanding a market for their product.
And Marlo, so I think you're a markets guy, and you should understand that there's no such thing as a politically correct automaker. There are automakers that want to make money, and they all want
money. In the minds of policymakers, there are politically correct, and then there are the politically incorrect.
Let's talk about what automakers are trying to do.
They're trying to invest
for the future.
Levi, just a moment. When we talk about affordability, Marlo, affordability comes in a lot of different forms. I mean, there's the aspect of, I mean, I'm about, like I said, I am so happy that I am like $1,100 away from paying off my car. I could do a cartwheel in this building right now. And I've already started thinking about like what my next car might be, which is crazy because I just finished paying off a car. Why am I thinking about buying another car? That's not the point. The point is, when I think about that car, you know, do I want to spend money on a car that's going to cost me just as much when I drive it off the dealership as when I buy it? Do I want to keep spending money to fill my tank? Maybe I don't. Because, you know, in my first job in public radio, I was putting at least 75 miles a day on my car covering the news. If I had been able to buy an electric car, spend a few thousand more dollars on the front end, and not have to keep going to the gas tank all over South Florida to fill it up and fill it up and fill it up and fill it up, that's a really appealing value proposition. So they're saving money, and they're saving money. You know what I'm saying?
It is, but you can do that in a free market. You don't need government to have a mandate that requires that a certain percentage of the market be penetrated by these vehicles in order for consumers to be able to buy one.
I hear you, Marlo, on that, but do you believe merely that you don't have to do that, or do you believe that it is demonstrably harmful to the market to do that? Because if there's no harm in it, then what's the problem?
The harm in it is that right now, basically, you're getting people in Tennessee who are buying big pickups are effectively subsidizing cars that are built in California, because the automakers have to produce a certain number of very high fuel efficiency cars in order to comply with the average. And even though the real profit here is in, you know, the sales of pickups and SUVs, you've still got to produce these other cars for political reasons, essentially, because the regulation requires it. And so the only way that you can really offset your losses on these vehicles that most people don't want is to jack up the prices for vehicles that people do want, like the pickups and the SUVs.
Before I get to Sonari, and Sonari, I'll come to you 1 second. Do you believe that the car makers are selling these electric vehicles, Marlo, for reasons that are purely political? Do you think they wouldn't be making them otherwise?
I think they would be making them otherwise, but then that's just the point. If they were making them otherwise, why do we need a law that makes them sell these cars, right? And There would be some difference, though. And I think that difference would represent a gain in consumer choice and affordability.
Sonari?
Well, there's so many other things that, you know, one, those trucks that are fueling the auto industry, they are all where all the profits are. We're talking about a time in the industry where there have been record profits, record sales right now. And like I say, when you look at what the industry has done, you know, 8 years ago, the industry was saying, oh, no, we can't do it. And now you have an F-150 that's made out of aluminum. You see all the things that the industry has done, right? And when you think about savings just quickly, when you, like, is there a more live free or die thing than to be able to take your electric car, plug it into your house where the energy is local, and, you know, you use solar panels? So, like, there where then all the fuel is essentially free, right? It's $15 a month. So, like, that's an argument that's made often about the savings for individuals eventually. These expensive cars are paying for a lot of this development, and it's mainly about autonomy and about fuel savings.
Let me get to a few more of your comments before our time is short. Levi, briefly, and then we got to keep going.
Yeah, it's record profits, record sales, and also record increases in fuel economy. And I think that's the really important part here that we can't forget. We are seeing an industry that is thriving. We are seeing an industry that is innovating. And we are seeing an industry that is producing the most fuel-efficient vehicles that it ever has. And that is based on those Obama-era rules. And despite the fact that there is no problem here, it's not broke. The Trump administration is coming in and saying, we're going to fix it, but they're going to break it.
Worth noting that not everyone who's commented on this topic is against the changes. We have heard from some of you who approve of the proposal from the Trump administration, including this gentleman who left a note in our inbox.
Hi, my name's Clinton Alley, and I'm calling from Eureka, California. I'm in favor of Donald Trump's changes to the emission standards on cars. And the reason is, in order to achieve this higher mileage, you're going to have to install more complicated and expensive types of systems on the cars in order to get them to do what they do. What that means is that as these systems become better known to people, especially how expensive they are to fix after you've driven the car for 100,000 miles, people will stop buying those cars and they'll simply invest in older, more simple cars that are easier to maintain and don't cost as much money.
Clinton, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us. One other aspect of this I wanted to get to is the safety piece of this. And Sonari, maybe I could stick with you on this one for starters. The proposal from the Trump administration claims that by rolling back these standards, it will save lives. It will decrease the number of crash fatalities. Some of our listeners are thinking more about life-saving in a broader sense. Abby tweeted, the Trump administration says its new emissions policy will save 13,000 lives and save money. But what about lives lost as a direct result of climate change and the costs of increasing health care for diseases correlated with pollution? Sonari, what about that?
Well, we do have to think about the overall savings, but if you think about this argument that more people will buy more new cars, well, we know that the more cars on the road, that's more traffic fatalities. Like, that tends to be a thing, and we're nearing the high. So I don't quite understand where that argument goes. And also, in the other part of, you know, the U.S. Department of Transportation, there is, you know, where is the industry at? I mean, where's the government at about, you know, getting the U.S. to zero fatalities, which is an issue in other European countries where we haven't seen the industry moving as aggressively on, you know, things away from fuel standards that would make our streets and roads safer. So I wonder about, you know, where that argument is. Clearly, in a place like China where people can't breathe, you know, like, this is a political issue. It's a political issue throughout Europe, and it is not a conservative or liberal one. And that it's not yet one here or in places where you don't have days where you just can't go outside. And the more that's an issue, that's going to be economically and politically a problem for people.
Marlo, let me let you respond to a few more comments about the health aspect of this, and I know our time is short. Pat is in Oakland Township, Michigan. Pat writes, health, economy, clean environment, how much is it worth to the human race? Pay now or pay later? And Maddie's Resisting tweeted, just what are Marlo's thoughts on the terrible air quality in California? How many lives have been lost due to that problem? The idea of more people owning cars means more cars on the road. In what universe is that safer? California should control this problem. Marlo?
The Trump proposal is not designed to increase the net number of motor vehicles on the roads. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. It's the idea that people will replace their older, more polluting vehicles with newer, cleaner vehicles. You know, jalopies don't have great emissions performance. New vehicles do. So I don't think that's a real concern with this rule. As for climate change, based on the Obama Environmental Protection Administration modeling, so I think you can trust this to be based on consensus climatology, the Trump revisions would add 0.03 of a degree Celsius to global warming by the year 2100. That is such a vanishingly small number that it would make no practical difference to weather patterns, crop yields, sea levels, polar bear populations, or any other climate-related condition people actually care about.
Levi, before you chime in, I just want to read one more comment. Grouchy Mike wrote on our website, the1a.org, let me start with the foundation that I'm a Trump supporter. However, this time, I think Mr. Trump is dead wrong. Shouldn't America start producing electric vehicles that provide the same performance and utility today so we aren't left out of the auto markets just a few years away? Levi, I know we're short on time, but let me let you comment before we got to go.
Absolutely. So when it comes to those climate numbers, as I mentioned earlier, we are in a sinking life raft, and that life raft has 1,000 holes. We need to plug every single one of those holes, and we cannot selectively look at each hole and say, look, this hole only accounts for 1% of the water that is gushing into this life raft. This is a complex problem, and it pervades the entire economy, and that means we have to confront this problem in many different sectors. Pulling this patch off of that hole in the life raft is going to make our future worse. It is going to harm our economy, and it is going to harm the future of our children.
Quite a debate ahead on this proposal as it undergoes its public comment period before potentially being finalized. Levi Tilleman, former special advisor for energy in the Obama administration and the author of The Great Race, The Global Quest for the Car of the Future. Levi, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Marlo Lewis, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thanks, Marlo.
Joshua, a pleasure.
And journalist Sonari Glinton, formerly NPR's auto industry correspondent. Sonari, good to talk to you, man. Thanks.
You are the best, my friend.
Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or whatever app you like. Please do write us a review. And if you're like, podcasting? What's podcasting? You'll find all the links to listen online at npr.org/1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.